Side 7, Lord Brocktree, by Brian Jakes. Continuing on page 267. Dumai grabbed the flagon from his brother and swigged at it.
What? Does he want us to say thanks to them things?
Rip Fang elbowed his slow-thinking brother hard.
Shut your gob, Whiffle Brain. You'll have to excuse him, sire. Dumai ain't very bright. So, me lordship, what is it yer wants us to do for yer, eh?
The Wildcat assessed Rip Fang. He was young still, but experienced and hardened to cruelty and death. Evil was stamped on his features, from the treacherous flickering eyes and scarred nose to the unsightly single fang protruding downward from the center of his lipless mouth.
I suppose you slew quite a few in your seasons as a sea rat.
Rip Fang snatched the flagon back from Dumai and guffawed.
Me and me brother here, we killed just about anything that moved. All types of beasts. Young, old, males, more she-males. Har! And we slew them any way we could. In a few ways what don't bear thinking about. Ain't that right, Doom?
Dumai dug food scraps from between his blackened teeth with a dirty claw.
Aye, you're right there, Rip. Any way we could, we murdered him.
The Wildcat sat back and purred.
Excellent. Now, listen to me. If you want to keep eating food like that and regain your rank as captains in my hordes.
Bragalaw stroked the heron's neck.
Good job you found this other cave, Rulango. My old mum was beginning to create and kick up something awful about all the loot we was bringing back.
The cave was up coast, slightly north of the sea otter's dwelling, a fortunate find indeed. Stiffener took a torch from its wall mount to light their way out. From floor to roof, the place resembled a well-stocked larder coombe armory. Weaponry and uniforms lined its walls, while at the center there was an enormous heap of fruit, vegetables, and edible roots. Plunder taken from the foraging patrols by the bark crew. Outside, they doused the torch in the sand and camouflaged the cave entrance with a dead sea buckthorn bush. Troby kept a branch to cover their tracks.
I say, let's get back and see what luck old Derby had today. Maybe his crew brought back some shrimp, what?
Brog's mother, Frutch, was in the process of giving Derby and his crew a good dressing down.
Seasons of seaweed and salt! What are we supposed to do with all this shrimp? That's what I'd like to know, Master Derby. There can't be a single shrimp left in the sea.
Derby dodged a swipe of the otter mom's ladle.
Belay with that weapon, Marm. I'm only doing what your son told me to. You ain't supposed to biff members of the bark crew with ladles. That's taking the side of the enemy.
Brog rescued the ladle from his mom and hugged her.
What's for supper, you little plump battler?
Frutch tugged at his whiskers.
Put me down, you great rib crusher, or I won't be fit to cook anything for any beast. Suffer in sand hills. Did any poor otter mom have to put up with such a son?
Brog's nose twitched at the two cauldrons which his mum, Blench, and Wobie had perched on the fire.
Skilly and Duff, me favorite.
The three cooks denied it stoutly.
We never did no Skilly and Duff, did we, Blench? No, Marm, we got shrimp soup. Followed by shrimp stew. Ain't that right, Wobie?
Tis for sure. And a nice shrimp salad for afters.
Brog's face was the picture of misery.
But I could have sworn I smelled Skilly and Duff.
Frutch plucked her ladle from his paw and whacked his tail.
Of course tis Skilly and Duff, the big omadorm. With lots of plums in the duff, the way you like it. Now make yourself useful, and you too, Mr. Stiffener. Lend a paw to get those cauldrons off in the fire.
Over supper, Derby told of his crew's exploits at sea that day.
Oh, we kept the blue-bottom fishing fleet busy, mates. We swam under their vessels and shredded the nets, stole all their shrimp, and ha ha ha! Tell Brog what you did, Conal.
'Twas like this, see?
A sleek otter maid with a face born to mischief explained.
I waited till they dropped anchors to fish. soon as they cast their nets, I attached each boat's net to the next boat's anchor flutes, snarled them up good and proper. Hee hee! You should have seen the vermin hauling away at those nets. All the vessels came bumping together. There was blue bottoms flopping and falling this way and that. Harder they hauled, the worse it got. Them boats was knocked together so hard that three of them sprang leaks. Last I saw, they was trying to paddle back to shore and bailing out at the same time, dragging most of the fishing fleet along with them. I tell you, Brog, 'twas a sight to see.
Another of Derby's crew piped up.
Aye. Then they started fighting among themselves. So I slices through the anchor ropes, and off they went like big flapping birds with the wind behind them. That old fleet hit the shore so hard that they was all run aground.
Sailors chuckled with delight at the sea otter's story.
Wish I could swim like you chaps, then I could jolly well go along with you.
Derby gallantly refilled her bowl from the cauldron.
You're doing just fine as the onshore bark crew, Marm. I reckon those rascals must really be feeling the pinch now. What do you think, Stiff?
I think you're right. They're learning a hard lesson the hard way. Even if Trun and the officers kept the best for themselves, I'll wager they've more or less gone through what stores was left in Blench's larders.
Stiffener little knew how truly he spoke. At that exact moment, Ungat Trun was prowling into Salamandastron's dining hall, followed by Frigoril, carrying her master's plate. Taking it from her, the wildcat shoved the platter under the cook's nose.
What do you call this mess of rubbish?
Wiping his paws on his greasy apron, the cook avoided eye contact with his master, stammering nervously.
My goodness, 'tis all we've got left. You had the Frigoril take the last of the good stuff up to your chamber. I drained the wine kegs to fill a pitcher, and those scones was well stale, but they was all I had left.
Trun stared around the deserted tables as the cook continued.
"'Tain't worth any beast turning up here for victuals, mighty one. There ain't nothing to serve 'em. Them bark crew are to blame, I say, stealing the food out in our mouths like that. I've been mixing some moldy flour with chopped seaweed and dandelion roots. Don't know what I'll do when that's gone, sire.'
Ungat Trun pushed the plate into his trembling paws.
"'Stop babbling and whining and keep your voice down. After tomorrow there'll be food aplenty for all. Put the word about that this is my promise to you.'
Marching hurriedly from the dining hall, the wildcat was rounding a torch-lit passage leading out to the shore when a shadow fell over him. He fell back with a horrified gasp, shielding his face with a paw. The shadow was that of a great, double-hafted sword-hilt. Trun stood petrified at the sight. It grew larger and came closer. A strangled cry was torn from his throat, and he shrank back against the rough rock walls. Two gaunt rats rounded the corner, carrying between them three driftwood spars lashed together, the shadow of which looked for all the world like a giant double-hilted sword haft. They chatted to each other as they toted their burden.
"I thought you said this would get all seaweed tangled round it. Well, we jammed it between those rocks on the tide line. It should have got some seaweed stuck to it at high tide. But it never did it? Huh. Talk about bright ideas."
Noticing Ungat Trun, they dropped the contraption and saluted.
"Mightiness!"
The wildcat wiped a trembling paw across his ashen face.
"Take that thing and burn it!"
he shouted hysterically.
"Burn it! Do you hear me? Burn it!"
Blank-faced, the two rats were knocked to one side as the wildcat swept by them on his way to the shore. They looked at one another and shrugged.
"What was that all about, mate?
Search me. Get that torch off in the wall and put a light to this thing afore his mightiness comes back.
Was I seeing things, or did he look frightened? Looked like he'd seen a ghost.
This won't burn. 'Tis damp.
Well, get your sword and chop it up till you find the dry bits."
Ungat Trun sat on the sand, which was still warm from the day's sun. Much as he had hated and despised Grottle, he missed the fox magician's soothing words. Every day the specter of the badger looming in his mind was growing larger. He was surrounded by his blue hordes, yet trapped alone by the visions of his own imagination, with no beast to explain them or chant encouraging prophecies. He stared disdainfully at the silent Grand Frigoral in attendance as ever.
Well, what have you got to say for yourself?
Nothing, sire, the ferret replied warily. His footpaw shot out, sending her sprawling in the sand.
Nothing. That's all you ever say. Get out of my sight.
Frigoral made an undignified retreat on all fours. It was wisest to do what Ungat Trun said immediately and without question when he was in one of his dark moods, which were growing more and more frequent as the days went by. Some horde beasts grubbing for seaweed nearby heard their leader laugh bitterly and talk aloud to himself.
The mountain of my dreams! Ha! More like the mountain of my nightmares! So, these are the days of Ungat Trun, eh?
29. After breakfast next morning, Derby was leaving with his crew to harass the fishing fleet. Frutch shook her ladle at him, and he held up both paws placatingly.
Don't say it, Marm. We've got the message. No more shrimp.
Brogalaw entered the cave with Rulango stalking in his wake.
Ahoy! Here's a bird who's very partial to shrimp. Feed our friend well, Mum. He just sketched me out an important message. Stiffener, get the bark crew together, mate. There's a small party, about 25 blue bottoms, left the mountain at dawn. Rulango reckons they're headed this a ways, armed with bags and avi sacks.
Stiffener donned his bark cloth cloak and mask, arming himself with sword, bow, and arrows. He beckoned to the rest of the hares and otters who were gearing themselves up.
Another foraging party? Let's send those vermin back sore-tailed and empty-pawed, eh, mates?
Wolby threw her apron up over her face.
Be gone, the lot of you! I don't hold with masks and cloaks. Fair scare a body they do. Away with ye!
Torley bowed courteously.
No need to fuss yourself, Marm. 'Tis only us under this lot.
Ripfang and Doomeye had taken 150 horde beasts out of the mountain long before dawn. They concealed themselves in the crags and crannies behind Salamandastron. Each of them was personally picked by the Rat Brothers. There were a lot of former sea rats and corsairs among their ranks. All in all, they were a mean and savage-looking bunch, armed to the teeth. Ripfang climbed down from his lookout spot.
The forage party decoys are well on their way, heading northeast to the cliff tops and dunes to scout for berries and roots. Doomeye, take your gang and sweep southeast. Get well back from the cliffs before you start closing in.
Doomeye fiddled with his spear, as if reluctant to go.
Which way are your lot going? The short way, I'll bet.
Ripfang tossed a long dagger and caught it neatly.
We'll be following the same route as the foraging party. I've been drumming that into your half the night. That way we'll catch this bark crew in a pincer movement, from back and front. Simple plans, always works best. I told you.
Doomeye stuck out his bottom lip sullenly.
I still don't like it. From what I've heard, this bark crew just appear out of nowhere. They say they're like spirits.
Ripfang brandished his dagger impatiently.
That's ogwash, and you know 'tis. I'll tell you who I think they are. Those 70 escaped long ears, that's who. Are you lot as hungry as I am, eh?
There was a rumble of agreement from both mouths and stomachs. Ripfang made a slashing movement with his blade.
Then what are we waiting for? There's meat on the paw for the taking. You want to eat? Then move yourselves.
Doomeye kicked at the dirt, staying where he was.
You still haven't said why me and my gang got to go the long way round. 'Tain't fair.
Ripfang flung the dagger, burying it in the earth right between his brother's footpaws.
Listen, lumphead, you get going right now. Otherwise, I'm going back inside to report to Ungat Trun, and you can see how well you do taking charge of this lot.
Doomeye got up huffily and signaled his party to move off.
All right, keep your fur on. We're going. Never thought I'd see a brother of mine snitching to the chief on his own fur and blood. Anyhow, what's the signal for the ambush? I've forgotten it.
Rip Fang turned his eyes skyward as if seeking help from above.
What's to forget, shrimp brain? I've told you 10 times already. Furry gear will give 2 curlew cries. That's the signal for use to attack.
You do know what a curlew sounds like, don't you?
Dumai led his party out of the rocks, shouting back at his ill-tempered brother,
"Course I do! It sounds just like you trying to snore through that single pickle stabber of yours, Twiddletooth!"
Rip Fang flung a rock at Dumai, but it fell short.
"I'll get you for that. Just see if and I don't."
Lying in concealment, the bark crew watched the foragers climb the cliffs at a place where a small streamlet trickled down. Bragala noted their every movement, murmuring low to Stiffener.
"They're stopping to take a drink now. Some of 'em picking crowberries and eating them. Nasty, bitter-tasting things. I've never liked crowberries. Have you, Stiff?"
The boxing hare shrugged.
"Not really. Still, you'll eat anything once the hunger grips your stomach. Dumb, stupid vermin. I pity 'em in a way."
Willip snorted.
"Save your pity for decent creatures, sir. These are the same rotten bounders who were planning on eating us when they had us locked up. Pity 'em, indeed."
Brog saw 2 vermin detach themselves and climb to the top. A moment later, they were calling back to the other foragers.
"There's nettles up here, and some bilberries!"
The rest of the party climbed up. Once on top, they could not be seen by the bark crew, but their voices came back clear.
"More nettles than bilberries, I'd say. Ouch! They sting!"
"Well, that's what nettles are supposed to do, mate. Pick 'em. You can brew good beer with nettles."
"Huh! Will you listen to him? What beast could wait a season for nettles to brew? We'd all be starved dead by then."
"Oh, stop moaning. Use your blade and cut the nettles. They'll do to make soup with."
Brog picked up his javelin.
"Ain't going to be so easy while they're out in the open. Still, if we jump those blue bottoms quick, it should do the trick. When I show myself, see if you can get a few round the back of 'em, Stiff. Sailors, you and the others stay just below the cliff top, but show your weapons to let the vermin think they're surrounded. Well, here goes. Good hunting."
The forage party leader was a weasel. He did not know that his band had been sent out as a decoy. While the others were busy at their work, he stuffed a pawful of bilberries into his mouth.
"Tut, tut, matey, stealing food!"
A voice nearby chided him. Without looking up, the weasel glimpsed the barkcloth robe and groaned inwardly.
"You're a leader. You should be setting an example to those under ye."
The sinister, cloaked and masked figure stood framed by the weapons that poked up over the cliff. Raising his voice, Brog called harshly to the vermin.
"Move a muscle and you die. A bark crew javelin's a lot sharper than some old nettles you'll find."
A rat knocked over his haversack and berries spilled out.
"Ow, no! 'Tis the bark crew!"
Stiffener walked up from behind him and rested a loaded sling upon the rat's bowed head.
"Ow, yes, 'tis the bark crew, you mean. Toss your weapons over by me, all of you. You're surrounded."
Shielding his eyes against the sun, the weasel looked up at Brog.
"You ain't gonna kill us, are you, sir?"
He gulped aloud. There was a touch of humor in the masked figure's voice.
"Not just yet. Pick those berries first, but leave the nettles. I don't want you to get your paws pricked. Go on, pick!"
Nervously, the forage party picked the bilberries.
"Why do you want to slay us?"
A rat whined at Torleap.
"We ain't done no harm to no beast."
The hare gave him a resounding kick on his blue-dyed rear.
"Fibber, cad, bounder! Don't look for mercy from me, sir."
When the berries were all picked and bagged up, Brog made the vermin shed their uniforms. The weasel leader suddenly broke down and clung, weeping, to Stiffener's cloak.
"Ah, spare us, sire! Spare our lives! Please, I beg you, don't kill us! Wah-ha-ha!"
Stiffener's loaded sling wrapped the weasel's paws until he was forced to release the cloak hem. The boxing hare's voice was laden with contempt.
"Spare your lives, eh?
like you spared the old badger lord. But he went out like a true warrior, fighting for his life. Look at yourself, coward, blubbing like a stuck toad.
Torleap was slinging the bags onto a spear shaft when a strange noise cut the still noon air. Stiffener whirled around to face Brog.
What was that?
The otter yanked his friend to one side just in time. A slingstone buzzed by like an angry hornet. Dumai's horde beasts came charging out of the eastern moorland, howling and yelling, firing slingstones and discharging arrows at the bark crew. Torleap dashed to the cliff edge and glanced over.
I say, there's more coming up this way!
He never had time to say more. An arrow thudded into his throat. Torleap tottered for an instant, then fell over the cliff. Rogalaw gathered the bark crew swiftly.
Take a stand facing forward and aft, mates. Grab your bows.
Stiffener stood back to back with the sea otter, battling the vermin who were scrambling over the clifftop, while Brogalaw faced the crowd charging them from the moorland.
"'Tis a trap, Stiff. They got us surrounded.
The boxing hare whirled his sling, knocking a rat back over the cliff.
There's a lot of them, but we ain't surrounded yet, Brog. They've got us in a pincer move from back in front. Keep picking off the outsiders. Stop 'em circling us.
The otter alongside Brog went down with a spear through him. Dumai's contingent had slowed their headlong rush and were advancing cautiously now. They tried to stay in a tight bunch, no beast wanting to be strung out on the edges where they would be picked off. Rip Fang had his group halfway over the clifftop before he saw how furiously the bark crew were retaliating. Dropping back below the rim, he called out orders.
Keep your heads down. We'll snipe 'em to bits. Pick your targets. There's only a score and a half of 'em.
Stiffener took out a weasel with a spear that had just missed him a moment ago. Still back to back with Brog, he outlined a plan that was forming in his mind.
I'd say we're outnumbered 5-1, mate. We'll have to make a break for it, sideways.
An arrow hit Brog in the shoulder. He bit his lip and snapped off the shaft.
I'm with you, mate. Best go north, away from the location of our cave. Do it soon, afore we lose any more beasts.
Stiffener could feel the arrowhead that had pierced Brog scratching his back. Willip was down on all fours, blood flowing from a gash on her head. The weasel and his forage party were lying flat on the ground, paws covering their heads, unarmed and out of the action. Brog grabbed the weasel and hauled him roughly up.
Up on your squinging paws, you blue bottoms, and form two lines, a spear length apart. Move or I'll kill ye.
Whimpering and trying to evade missiles, the vermin were forced to obey. Brog ordered his bark crew into the space between the two lines.
Keep going north, then strike east the moment you see some trees, mates. We got a living shield to take us out of here. If in these blue bottoms try to slow up or break away, you got my permission to slay 'em. Quick, march!
Confused by the sight of two lines of hostages from their own side, the vermin ceased fire, and the bark crew moved smartly off while they had the advantage. Rip Fang hauled himself over the cliff tops, yelling,
Don't let 'em get away, fools! Kill that bark crew!
Dumai came running up at the head of his vermin group.
Oh, odd luck, Rip. They fooled us that time, eh?
Rip Fang punched his brother in the eye.
That was you, puddle brain. You never waited for the signal.
One of Dumai's patrol, a ferret, stepped forward.
You shouldn't have punched him. Your brother stepped on a thistle and yelped out loud. We all thought it was the signal, so we charged. 'Twasn't his fault.
Rip Fang punched the ferret square on the nose.
Who asked you, slug face? I'm giving orders round here. Now get after him, the lot of you, and slay the bark crew.
The ferret wiped blood from his nose and glared at it. Then he lashed out, cracking Rip Fang between the ears with his spear haft.
You ain't a cap'n anymore. Trun broke yous two back down to the ranks. And besides, we'd have to kill our own mates to get at the bark crew. I ain't doing that.
Rip Fang rubbed his head, grinning ruefully.
You're right, mate. You ain't doing that. You're staying here.
Quick as light, he drew his cutlass and ran the ferret through, then waved the dripping blade in an arc.
Any beast else want to stay here? Come on, who wants to join him? Step up and face me!
They backed off, staring dumbly at the slain ferret. Suddenly, Rip Fang was among them, laying about savagely with the flat of his blade.
After him! All of you! I don't care who you bring down, as long as you finish the bar crew off!
With Rip Fang in the rear, cutlass drawn, they took off after the enemy, who had a good head start. Stiffener cast a glance over his shoulder as he ran.
Didn't take him long, Grog! Here they come!
The Sea Otter skipper peered anxiously ahead.
No sign of any trees yet, Stiff. Sailors, how's Willip doing?
Still groggy, I'm afraid. And there's a young otter here, Fergan, who's taken a javelin through the footpaw. Slowing us down a bit, but that can't be helped, what?
Stiffener called Troby and two otters, Ervo and Rad.
Fetch double quivers and bows. We'll hold the rear, mates.
Don't let them catch up,
one of the forage party sobbed.
They'll kill us just to get at yous.
Brog clouted his head soundly.
Shut your mouth, or I'll boot you over the cliff.
Stiffener and his three archers let the others go on ahead. Stringing shafts to their bows, they brought down two horde beasts who were running ahead of the rest. After another volley, they joined their friends. Troby kept another shaft ready on his bowstring and walked facing back.
I think we took out seven vermin back at the cliff tops. Counting the two we just dropped, that makes nine. Not bad, considering we lost only three. Two otters and old Torleap.
Stiffener turned to join him.
Nine don't make a lot of difference to the crowd they've got, Troby. We're in big trouble unless we can get some help.
He raised his voice, calling to the front of the column.
Any sign of shelter ahead? Trees? Rocks? Or whatever?
Not a thing, matey,
an otter's voice replied.
All I can see is a big dead old tree near the cliff edge up yonder. Sorry.
Brog's voice joined in the shouted conversation.
Ahoy! Did you say a big dead tree? I know that one. Used to fish up this way. If and I ain't mistaken, there's a whole circle of rocks on the shore down there, above the tide line. Cut off and take a peek, Sailiers.
Sailiers left the group and bounded to the cliff edge. She was back shortly with good news.
Brog, old chap, you were right. A ring of rocks, not unlike a blinking small fort. Oh, well done, sir.
Stiffener and his archers dropped back and fired off another two volleys of arrows. This time the vermin saw them coming and avoided them. Brog waved the archers to join the column.
Never mind that now, mateys. Let's get down to those rocks.
At the rear of the vermin, Dumai was holding a pawful of wet sand to the eye which his brother had punched. Rip Fang watched him and shook his head in despair.
All that'll get you is an eye full of wet sand, you ninny.
Dumai spat contemptuously at him.
Think you know everything, don't you? You rotten slime punching me in the eye like that. Well, I ain't your brother no more, see? I hope one of those errors out of the air gets you right in your eye. Then you'll see how it feels.
Look, they're climbing down the cliffs to the shore.
Sunbeast shouted ahead. Rip Fang ran to the cliff edge and peered along.
Trying to make it to those rocks, eh? Well, we've got 'em now. We can easily surround those rocks. Slow down and catch your breath, mates. They ain't going nowhere.
It was hot on the rocks. The sand at the center of the stone circle was dry and hot, too. The bark crew threw themselves down gratefully, shedding cloaks and masks. Sailiers tended to the injured, while Brogalaw and Skipper watched the cliff tops.
Ain't got much time to rest, Stiff. Here they come, climbing down the cliff. How many would you say they've got?
Oh, about 102 more. Too many for us.
Brogalaw stroked his whiskers thoughtfully.
You're right. But we still got enough to make a fight of it. One thing, though, mate. What do we do with these beasts we captured? They might prove troublesome.
Stiffener saw the last vermin stumble down to the shore.
Well, we got no more use for 'em, and we certainly can't feed the scum. I say we let 'em go. What do you think, Brog?
Aye, let's rid ourselves of the pests. Ahoy there, Weasel. Get yourself over here.
The forage patrol leader practically crawled across.
You're going to kill us. I know you are. I can feel it.
Brog hauled him up sharply by the ears.
Good news, Blubber Chops. We're letting you go. All of you.
What? You mean you're letting us go, sir?
Aye, that's what I said. Though if you hang around here weeping and moaning all day, we'll slay you just for the peace and quiet 'twould give us. So you'd better run for it.
As Rip Fang was giving the orders to form a circle around the rocks, Doomeye, who was still a fair shot despite his swollen eye, unshouldered his bow and shot off an arrow at one of the freed prisoners.
Ha-har! Got one of them! He was trying to escape! Look, there's more of the Bark crew!
Rip Fang's cutlass chopped through Doomeye's bowstring.
What did you do that for? Leave me alone, will you?
Rip Fang pointed angrily at a fallen weasel.
See what you've done now, Banhead? Shot one of our own!
Doomeye looked sheepish.
Well, what if and I did?
He muttered sulkily.
You said 'twas all right, long as we got the Bark crew.
Rip Fang ignored him. He called to the forage party, who were half in and half out of the rocks, not knowing which way to go.
Over here, you lot! Come on, we won't shoot no more of you!
They hurried across, keeping nervous eyes on Doomeye, who was restringing his bow. Rip Fang sneered at them.
Well, well, what have we got here? A shower of cowards, with no uniforms or weapons. You lot better make yourselves slings and gather some stones. Might look better on you if you help to capture the Bark crew.
Back at the rocks, Stiffener was assessing the situation.
Well, we've given the vermin some reinforcements now. Still, we'd never have killed them in cold blood. They can't wait us out, 'cause they ain't got the supplies to do it. No, neither have we. The Blue Bottoms still outnumber us by far too many, but we're still dangerous and well-armed. They'll try to pick us off one by one, now that they've got us surrounded. Maybe when dark falls, they'll try a charge. What do you think, Brog?
The sea otter was sharpening a javelin against the rock. He nodded grimly.
Aye, that's when they'll come. It'll be the Bark crew's last stand. Ha-har, but we'll make it a good one, eh, mates?
Hares and otters gripped their weapons tighter.
Aye! No surrender and no quarter, given or asked. Take as many as we can with us. Remember Lord Stone, Paul, and the others, chaps.
This time, Rip Fang kept Doomeye close by where he could keep an eye on him. Both rats lay behind a mound of sand they had set up. Rip Fang watched the noon shadows beginning to lengthen. A cry rang out from the rocks.
Eulalia!
The ferocity of the war cry caused the sea rat a momentary shudder, but he soon recovered himself.
Ha! We've got ye outnumbered by far. Shout all you want. It won't do yous any good when night comes and we charge. I'll paint those rocks red with your blood.
No news had come back to the mountain of the trap that had been laid for the Bark crew, but Ungat Trun felt in better humor than he had for some while. One of his captains had come across a hidden cupboard in the larders, containing 3 casks of aged rose and greengage wine. He donated 2 of the casks to be shared among his horde captains, and the remaining one he had broached himself. All afternoon he drank deeply from it. The wine induced a pleasant and languorous feeling, and he drifted off into a peaceful sleep as noon sunlight poured through the chamber windows. Stretched on Lord Stonepaw's bed, the wildcat dreamed of nothing in particular. The North Mountains, where his old father reigned, his younger brother, Verdaga Greeneye, waiting to inherit the throne. Or maybe he was not. He might be considering the life of a conqueror, like his elder brother, Ungat. The sleeper smiled. No beast living could claim to have won anything as spectacular as this mighty mountain. Salamandastron, the legendary home of badger lords. Ungat Trun sighed and turned in his sleep. Then the vision altered. A huge, dark paw wrapped itself about his face, blinding and smothering him. The badger lord. He had come. He had come.
Help me!
Sire, lie still while I get this blanket from your head.
Writhing wildly, Ungat Trun lashed out and caught his Grand Fregorl a blow which sent her spinning across the room. Ripping and shredding with lethal claws, the wildcat tore the homely blanket from about his head and sat up panting, his head aching abominably. All semblance of good humor had deserted him.
"Who gave you permission to enter my chamber?"
he growled at Fregorl. The ferret rose groggily.
"Sire, you called for help. I came to assist you."
The wildcat tossed the tattered blanket aside and made to rise.
"Assist me? You way-faced poltroon! You dared to think that you had the right to assist me? Begone, before I throw your worthless hide from the window!"
The Grand Fregorl fled the chamber, followed by a wine goblet which smashed on the door as it slammed.
"I could have taken this mountain unaided. Ungat Trun, the Earthshaker, needs help from no beast. Go on. Whine, starve, moan, blunder about, all of you. This is my mountain. I rule it alone. I can hold it alone. Every creature here depends on me. I don't need any of you."
Outside, the two guards moved further down the passage away from the door.
"Shift along there, mate. Don't get too close when the chief's in one of his dark moods."
"Aye, the captains are all like that, too. What do you suppose started it all?"
"Guzzlin' wine on a midsummer noon, on empty stomachs, too. I done it myself once. Doesn't improve the temper, I can tell ye. Wish it'd get dark, so the night watch could come and relieve us. 'Tis dangerous standing round here."
Ignoring the glories of a setting sun on the sea's far horizon, the bark crew perched in the rocks, anxiously scanning the humps of sand surrounding them. Behind each one, several vermin lay, armed and ready, waiting for the shades of night to descend. Bragalaw spoke without turning to Stiffener, his eyes roving back and forth.
"What grieves me about all this is, no matter how many we takes to the dark forest with us, it won't make much difference to the numbers Trun has to serve him."
The boxing hare checked the shaft on his bowstring.
"Shame, ain't it? But that's the way of things, Brog. Willip, are you all right, mate?"
The old hare adjusted the makeshift bandage on her brow.
"Fit enough to fight, sir. But I'm jolly hungry, don't you know? Funny how a bod can think of food at a blinkin' time like this, what? Can't help it, though. The old tum's rumblin' 20 to the dozen."
The sea otter chuckled and shook his head.
"'Tis no wonder they call hares perilous beasts. Death facin' us, and that'n has dinner on her mind."
Stiffener shrugged.
"What's on your mind, Brog?"
Brogalog glanced at the darkening sky.
"My old mum, the rest of my crew, Dervy, young Conal, and the mateys I grew up with. I'd just like to clap eyes on them one last time. Any beast you'd like to see, Stiff?" Those twin grandsons of mine, Southpaw and Bobweave. You should have seen them, Brog. Two braver fighters you'd never come across in a season's march. I reared them, you know, until they grew restless and left the mountain. Maybe 'twas just as well they did, the way things turned out."
As the night drew on, voices began chanting from behind the sand humps which the vermin had put up for protection.
"Ungat! Trun, Trun, Trun!"
Brogalaw's grip tightened around the javelin.
"Ha-har! 'Twon't be much longer now, mates. Here I'm getting their nerve up to charge."
The speed and volume of the chant increased.
"Ungat! Trun, Trun, Trun! Ungat! Trun, Trun, Trun!"
From the rock circle, the otters and hares answered with their own defiant war cry.
"Blood and vinegar! Eulalie-ah!"
Stiffener centered his arrow on the dark form's breaking cover.
"Stand fast, mates! Here they come!"
The vermin charged. 30. In a wide valley formed by four grass-topped sand dunes, Lord Broctree put aside his empty plate and beaker. He lay back upon the sand next to Fleet's Cut and sighed contentedly, gazing up at dizzying myriads of stars strewn about the soft night sky. "Tomorrow, you say? Around late noon?" Fleet's Cut left off munching wild raspberries from the prone position and nodded.
"Indeed, sir. We should reach Salamander Strahd about then, providing we're up and about by dawn, what?"
Ruff joined them. Bucko, too, both highly pleased.
"Well, we did it, Brock. A half-season march."
"Ock, and you said it were nae mair than a wee patrol."
Fleet's Cut wrinkled his nose mischievously.
"Had to say something to keep your chaps going, what? Bit of a fib, but we made it. Hee-hee. Sorry about that. My wee patrol turned out to be something of a long patrol, what?"
The Badger Lord closed his eyes and mused. "Long patrol, I'd say that was a...
woof!"
Skittles had jumped from somewhere high up on one of the dunes. He landed like a stone on Brocktree's stomach, driving the wind from him completely. The Hogbaid seized his friend's whiskers and hauled on them.
"Come on, Buck! We go and fish fishes in a big water!"
The Badger gasped breathlessly as he tried to get up.
"Dotty, get this fiend off me! Throw him in the sea!"
Dotty had been trying to patch up the battered shawl she was taking as a gift for her Aunt Blanche. She stuffed it carelessly back into her bag and grabbed Skittles' paw.
"Come on, wretch! We'll go down to the water for a paddle!"
Skittles held out his other paw to Bucko, whom he was quite friendly with.
"Bucko for Paggles, too?"
The mountain hare rose, dusting off sand.
"Aye, I like wetting my paws in the sea. Come on, laddie."
"Going paddling, Miss Dotty? Splendid. We'll join you, what?"
"Rather. Nothing like a jolly old paddle neath the stars."
Southpaw and Bob Weave joined the ever-growing paddling party.
"Brr, I bain't feared of egert sea. I'll come, too."
Merklewort chased after them, waving a towel.
"Wait for me. I'll need to give my little babe a good drying when he's paddled. Seawater can cause cornflagenza, you know. That's what my old grandma used to say. And she knew."
Southpaw winked at Bob Weave.
"Cornflagenza, eh? Sounds pretty serious, what?" "Oh, I don't know. With a blinking name like that, you wouldn't know whether to eat it or suffer from it, old lad."
When they reached the tide line, the sea looked enchanting. A half-moon cast a path of golden ripples out from the horizon, and small foam-crested waves ran ashore, spangled with starlight, hissing softly on the cool, wet sand as they broke. Those who wore smocks tucked them up into their belts. Holding paws in a line, they jumped over each wave as it arrived, splashing and laughing joyously.
"Ho, 1, 2, 3, come to me! From far over the briny sea, 4, 5, 6, each wave flicks past my paws, the sand it licks, 7, 8, 9, all in line, this one rolling in is mine, 1 to 10, rise and wane, swelling as they come again."
Bucko Big Bones splashed water at girth.
"Yee-hoo! I've no done this since I was a bairn."
The smiling mole splashed back.
"I bain't never done e paglin' afore, sir. Girt fun 'tis for a child like I."
Skittles wriggled free of Dotty and Bucko. Throwing himself flat, he lay on his back in the sea, spouting water like a tiny whale.
"Yuck! This water tasters salty to me."
Merklewort, who had stayed dry on the shore, dashed into the shallows, brandishing her towel frantically.
"Spit it out, you naughty og, or you'll get seahitis, and your teeth'll drop out." "Ow! Why didn't I have a little nice-mannered og made, instead of this umthry kerfumption?"
The instant Skittles saw his mother bearing down on him, he took off. In a spray of giggles and splashes, he romped away along the edge of the tide line. Dotty and the rest gave chase. Skittles, as they had noticed before, could move surprisingly fast for an infant hedgehog.
"I say, come back, you little rip!"
"Hawk, The wee pin cushions away like a fish. Giddy back, yer, Master Skick.
They pursued him until he could run no more. The hog babe sat down in the shallows, twitching his head spikes resignedly.
Skickle's had enough now. Mother can dry me.
The paddling party sat down on the beach while Merkelwart scrubbed at her son with a towel.
What have you been told about running off, you dreadful little hog? Wait till your father hears about this, you brigand.
Girth silenced her with a wave of his digging claws.
Yer, hushy, marm. Miss Dot, can he hear aught?
Dottie's finely tuned ears quivered this way and that.
Matter of fact, I can, Girth. South of here it seems to be coming from. Sounds like some sort of ding-dong going on.
Southpaw and Bob Weave were up and running south along the shoreline, calling back to the others.
Sit tight, chaps. We'll be back in a tick, what?
Hi. You stay and rest yourself, Miss Dottie. We'll investigate.
Bucko sat the well-dried skittles on his lap.
Hoots, laddie. Bide here, they say. Look at yon pair go!
Dottie borrowed the damp towel to wipe her footpaws.
Indeed, sir. I think the bloomin' wind would have trouble trying to keep up with those twins.
Girth found some flat pebbles, and they passed the time by skimming them across the shallows. Neck and neck, sand spurting from their paws, the Hare twins raced back, looking as fresh as when they left. Both were excited and disturbed at the same time.
Vermin! Those blue vermin old fleets got mentioned. About 150 of the blighters. Got a small bunch of hares and otters surrounded, the cads. That's right, and they're attacking the poor creatures. Jolly unfair, I'd say. Those otters and hares are taking a terrible hammering.
Bucko Big Bones grabbed a chunk of driftwood.
Dorothea, away with ye. Bring Brocktree and the tribes. Merkelwart, bide here with Girth and the bairn. Point the way for 'em. Ye twins! Find yourself a weapon apiece, and take me tell you the battle. We'll lend a paw till our clans arrive.
Willeth lay dead on the rocks. Stiffener stood over her body, a whirling sling in one paw, a sword in the other, slashing and whacking at the vermin as they hurled themselves at him. A spear had chopped a chunk out of one of Troby's ears, and he and Sailears had been driven from their position. They stood out on the sand, backs against the rocks, thrusting hard with their spears. Bragalaw shouldered an otter who had been struck twice by arrows. The sea otter's skipper was using his broken javelin as a club. He roared out to Stiffener, his voice ringing over the melee.
Stiff! There's two outside the circle! Get 'em back, mate!
Stiffener bounded down onto the sand. Cracking the skull of one rat and slashing ferociously at two others, he drove them away from Sailears and Troby, giving them space.
Get back up on those rocks, you two, quick!
Turning, he ran a weasel through and flattened a stoat with a swift, hefty punch. Rip Fang had done what all careful vermin officers usually do. He had stayed out of the battle, directing it from the rear, and laying about the half-hearted ones who tried to hang back. He had kept Dumai with him, but his brother had bloodlust in his eyes now that he could see victory in sight. The sea rat licked his cutlass blade and danced on the spot with frustration.
Let me at him, Rip. I want to kill a few.
Rip Fang nudged him sharply.
Nah, you don't want to do that, Doom. Look, they've retreated for their last stand. There ain't many left, but they got nothing to lose now, so they'll be real dangerous. Stay out.
But Dumai dashed forward, waving his blade.
I ain't scared. Come on, Rip. Let's see the color of their guts. Yahar! Chart!
Dumai got no further. Bucko laid him senseless with a chunk of driftwood he was swinging. Rip Fang turned and dodged just in time to avoid his second blow.
What? You ain't one of them, are you? I ain't seen you before.
Southpaw and Bobweave needed no weapons. Both their long hind legs crashed into Rip Fang's head, knocking him out cold. Only 10 hares and otters were left, forming a tight circle in the sand at the center of the rock circle. The vermin stormed over the rocks and leapt at them, but were repulsed by the ferocity of the reception they received from their gallant defenders. However, the vermin knew they had won the battle, and they pressed home their assault once more. Stiffener had lost his weapon and was using only his knotted paws now. Brog pounded away at the wave of foe beasts with all he had left, a shattered javelin and a lump of rock. Over the clash of battle, the skipper of sea otters called out to his remaining friends,
"Give it one last go, mateys. We'll meet by the banks of the sunny streams, along with those who've already gone."
Suddenly a cry arose from outside the circle.
"Eulalia!"
Bucko and the twins came roaring in. They crashed into the enemy's flank and broke through to join the beleaguered party. Momentarily, the vermin fell back.
"I'm Bucko Big Bones, the mad March Hare Fray of the North Mountains. Ach, 'tis a grand auld evening to be battlin'."
Stiffener wiped blood from his eye and gaped in amazement.
"By the fur and fang, what are you two doing here?"
Southpaw and Bob Weave crouched in fighter's stances, grinning at the hesitant vermin surrounding them.
"What ho, Gramps? Nice time to pay a visit, what? Thought we'd drop in and lend a paw. Left or right, no difference to us, old chap."
A venturesome ferret, who had aspirations to captaincy, charged forward, urging the rest on.
"There's only three of 'em! Charge!"
He collapsed under a frightening barrage of hefty blows from Bob Weave, who shouted as he delivered the punches,
"Sorry to make a liar out of you, old lad, but listen!
Eulalia!"
His war cry echoed back at him like rolling thunder.
"Eulalia!"
Blue horde beasts were battered in all directions as Lord Brocktree mounted the rocks, swinging his mighty sword. The vermin fled screaming, though none of them got more than 20 paces. Squirrels, shrews, hares, otters, moles, and hedgehogs fell upon them. They took no prisoners. Stiffener sat down upon the sand, staring at the Badger Lord, completely bewildered.
"It's like seeing Lord Stonepaw when he was young, but bigger, much bigger. Who is this badger?"
Fleetscut ambled up and sat down beside his old friend.
"That's the great Lord Brocktree. Big, ain't he? A regular one-beast army, and make no mistake, what?" "Fleetscut, my dear old chap, where did you spring from? Is this your doing? Did you find Southpaw and Bob Weave and bring Lord Brocktree to our aid? Tell me everything." "Later, old friend. There's business to do first."
Introductions were made all around. Then the Badger Lord took command. "Logalog Gren, see if any vermin survived. I want no more killing. Bring them to me. Juka, tell your squirrels to take these dead horde beasts and leave them below the tide line. The sea will take care of them." Immediately, Juka's tribe set about stripping the dead vermin of armor and weapons. Fleetscut could not help making a loud observation within Juka's hearing.
"Scavengers! Not but a pack of carrion crows!"
Juka hurled herself at him, but the sturdy rough leapt between the beasts as they strained to get at each other.
"Thou long-eared glutton! Who gave thee the right to talk of my tribe in such a manner?" "I did, that's who! You bunch of bush-tailed carcass thieves!"
Brog came across to help Ruff hold them apart.
"Whoa now, less of that talk. Stow it, you two. At this rate, you'll end up no better than the vermin we're against. Oi! Listen to the sea otter and get some sense in your skulls. We're supposed to be friends, not foes."
They backed off from each other, glowering. Rip Fang, Doom Eye, and around a dozen vermin who had been knocked unconscious and still looked distinctly groggy were paraded in front of the stern-faced Brocktree. He silenced their excuses and pleas by picking up his sword.
"Stop whining. There's naught worse than cowards crying. Now, are your leaders slain, or are they here? Speak!"
"Those two, sire, Rip Fang and Doom Eye."
Both sea rats glared daggers of hatred at the one who spoke. Brocktree looked the brothers over.
"Heed me if you wish to live. You and your creatures will bury our dead. Here,
in this sand at the center of this rock circle. Carry them carefully. Treat them respectfully. My creatures will be watching you to see that you do. On all fours, the vermin were forced to dig a hole with their paws. Brog, Stiffener, and the remainder of the bark crew placed their slain friends gently in the grave. When it was filled in, the Badger Lord turned his attention back to the huddle of trembling vermin. This shall be the epitaph of these brave warriors, that they died fighting against superior odds, with no hope. Yet they never deserted their comrades, in whose memories they will live on. If fortune had been reversed, do you think they would have trembled and wept for their lives? Do you? His voice rose so sharply that the vermin sat bolt upright. Rocktree did not wait for their answer, but continued, No, they would not act as you do now. They had courage. And I will not act now as you would have, had you been the victors of this fray. I will not kill you. Your miserable lives are spared. But I want you to take a message back to your master from me, Lord Brocktree of Brockhall. 31. It was late morn of the following day. Ungat Trun exited by a window space high up on the mountain and strode up a winding path to a lookout post. Karangul was there with two sentries. He saluted the wildcat. Mightness! Both sentries slid past Trun and backed off down the path, saluting and bowing furiously. He watched them, puzzled.
Where are those two going?
The Saturnine Fox pointed north and slightly west.
Ambush party be coming back, Mightness.
The Wildcat's first reaction was to smile, but his face stiffened as he glimpsed the 14 figures, neck deep in the sea, plowing their way homeward. Wordlessly, he swept past Karangul back down the path. The fox followed him. As they came out onto the shore, Karangul looked back. Fregorl was watching from a chamber window, but now she ducked down out of sight, not wanting to be involved with what would follow. Wisely, Karangul dropped behind a pace or two. Ungat Trun stared in disbelief as the pitiful party stumbled out of the sea. As before, the blue dye had gone from their coats. Only their heads were still blue. Each had their paws bound tightly in front. Moreover, they could not avoid walking in a straight line. They had been linked together at neck height by four long pikes, lashed two by two, the poles pressing close against their necks. At either end of the pikes were long metal spearheads, which had been twisted together, two at each end, sealing the 14 like peas in a pod. They collapsed on the sand, fighting for breath, for seawater had swelled the wooden pike shafts, tightening their grip about the captives' necks. Karangul signaled some vermin. They prized the pikes apart, slicing at the ropes that held them together. When they were freed, Rip Fang and the rest lay exhausted, rubbing their throats as they gasped in fresh air. The fox inspected the metal pike heads, wondering what creature possessed the strength to twist them into two spirals like that. Trun snatched a cutlass from a nearby horde beast. Karangul averted his eyes as the wildcat honed the blade on a rock, putting a sharp, jagged edge on it. This he placed against Ripfang's throat.
Where are the bodies of the bark crew? Where are the 100 and a half soldiers I set out to deal with them? Answer me truthfully, and I will spare you a slow death.
The wildcat stepped back a pace and swung the sword high to one side. He brought it slashing down, expertly stopping the blade a fraction from Rip Fang's exposed neck, and roared,
Tell me, you worthless lump of offal!
Rip Fang spoke four words, as if they were a magic spell.
I saw the badger.
The sword clattered against a rock as it fell from Trun's paw. He sat down in the sand next to Rip Fang, as if pushed there by a giant paw.
Leave us. Every beast go.
Karangul, the guards nearby, Dumai, and the others scattered, leaving Trun and Rip Fang together, alone on the shore. The tail flicked out and pulled the sea rat close.
I will not slay you.
I have a half-cask of wine. It is yours, if you tell me all. What did he look like? What did he say? Who was with him? What manner of beast? Tell me!
Rip Van relaxed and squinted up at the sun.
And I'm still a cap'n. And me brother Doom Eye too? Yes, of course. Now tell me, please.
The sea rat pulled Trun's tail from around his neck.
Where's this half cask of wine first? I'm thirsty.
As night fell, campfires blazed openly in the dunes facing the cave in the cliffs. Frutch sat out on a tussock at the cave mouth, her son by her side. Several others sat around close, enjoying some of the otter mom's plum and nut slices hot from the oven. She looked about at the teeming scene and clapped a paw to her cheek.
Well, dearie me, well I never. Fate's a mercy. I never did see so many creatures in all me born days.
Brogalaw hugged his mother and planted a big kiss on her brow.
Ahoy there, Mum. Are you going to keep on saying that all night? You left out, well, nail my rudder.
Crutch wiped her eyes on an apron corner, passed Dottie another slice, and patted her son's paw thankfully.
Well, seasons of salt water and nail my rudder. Where did you find all these nice beasts, Brog?
The sea otter grinned at his new friend, Ruff.
Well, at least she's changed her tune, mate. Oh, look out. Here comes Tears by the blinkin' pailful.
Blench and Wobie joined Frutch. In a trice, they were all passing kerchiefs, weeping and snuffling. Dottie licked crumbs from her paw and looked quizzically at Brog.
Beg pardon, sir? But do they always do that?
Only when they're happy, miss. Perhaps you'd like to give him a song. That always calms him down a mite.
He winced as Brocktree's paw dug him in the side.
Oof! What did I say?
The Badger Lord shook his head mournfully.
You'll find out, my friend. You'll soon find out.
Stiffener remonstrated sternly with the Hare twins.
Stop fighting, you two! What are you doing with the youngin's bag?
Just getting Miss Dottie's hair accordion out, Gramps. No, you ain't, chum. I'm getting it for Miss Dottie. I say, Gramps, wait till you hear her sing. She's a pip.
Dottie rescued her instrument, smiling sweetly at her admirers as she explained to the weeping trio,
My fatal beauty, you know, does it every time. Did I tell you I was nearly a queenness, or something like that? Never mind, ladies. I'll sing you a cheery old ditty, what?
Without further ado, Dottie launched into her song.
Did ever I tell you, when I was born, Pa cried we were clear out of luck. He sent me out searching for honey, and my head in a beehive got stuck. Poor mother was so forgetful, she put a plum pudding in bed, and covered my brother with custard. That'll do us for supper, she said. Oh, woe is me, what a family! There used to be just 6 of us, but now there's 33! Hee-hee-hee-hee! The day Grandma took up knitting, she couldn't tell yarn from fur, but she clacked her needles all evening and knitted herself to the chair. My sisters left home forever, then returned wet and soaking with tears. The fire had died, so 'twas I got 'em dried. I pegged 'em all out by their ears. Oh, woe is me, not another more. There used to be 33 of us, but now there's 34. Ha, 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 ha! Old Uncle was hard of hearing. He'd a trumpet to hold by his ear. Poor Auntie was so short-sighted that she often filled it with beer. When a squirrel dropped by for a visit, she tidied the place in a rush. Auntie swept the floor and varnished the door by using his tail as a brush. Oh, woe is me, and hair's alive. There used to be 34 of us, but now there's 35. Five!
Blench had been staring hard at Dottie, gnawing the hem of her kerchief, while the hair maid was singing. They had not been introduced. The old cook's ears suddenly stiffened as she recognized the family likeness, and her paw shot out accusingly,
Dilworthy! I knew it as soon as I clapped eyes on you, miss. Those young hares called you Dottie.
You must be Daphne's daughter, Dorothea.
Dottie's hair accordion gave out an unearthly squeak, as both she and it were squeezed in a vice-like hug.
Aunt Blanche? Of course it is, ye young snip. I should have recognized that voice right away. Last time I saw you was when you were a little fluffy babe, yelling for lettuce broth. What a racket!
Overcome by the emotion of the moment, Dottie burst into tears, as did her aunt. Brog led them back to his mum and Woby, who joined them in a good, loud weep. Ruff groaned and covered both ears.
Wrap me rudder, mate. 'Tis hard to tell what's worse, listening to Dottie's caterwauling or your mum's crying choir.
Baron Drucko hurried them both into the cave.
Let's see if there's somewheres quieter in here. I tell yer, we could use those four agin the enemy. Bet they'd drive him off that Samalandrokram Mountain.
Logalog Gren went with them. As she patted Brog's shoulder, she noticed him wincing.
Your shoulder's wounded, Brog.
The sea otter managed a rueful grin.
So 'tis, Marm, but don't tell my mum, or there won't be a dry eye this side of winter. I'll take care of it.
The shrew beckoned one of the squirrels over.
Let Ruro see it. She's the best ever for healing wounds.
An immense feeling of joy and relief reigned over the cliffs and cave, which the small party of hares and otters had used as their hiding place. The center of it all was Lord Brocktree. The big badger radiated quiet strength and confidence. Creatures passed close to him so that they could reach out and touch his huge form or admire the massive sword, with Skittles perched half asleep between its double hilts. Now they could sit out in the open, feeling safe and reassured by his presence. Sailors summed it all up in a single phrase.
At last we've got a leader, a real badger lord.
Cooking fires were stoked up to full pitch that night. Frutch left off weeping to show her multitude of guests what sea otter hospitality was all about. The otter mum and her helpers were happy to accept the offer of assistance from Gwasom cooks, squirrels, hedgehogs, and the ever-smiling Girth, son of Rog Longladle.
Your missus, where did he find all these shrimpers?
Woby hauled out another netful, which Dervy and his crew had brought back that afternoon.
From our very own fisher beasts, sir. Good old Dervy and the seafaring bark crew.
Conal, the cheeky otter maid, raised her rudder in surprise.
You was singing a different tune this morning, Marm. You threatened to boil me whiskers if we brought back more shrimp. Good job we did, though.
Blench appeared in their midst, swirling proudly.
My niece Dottie brought me this shawl for my sister Daphne. It's been in our family a long time. Isn't it pretty?
The shawl had been shredded, patched, torn, tattered, and inexpertly repaired. But Blench was enchanted with the family heirloom, and no beast was about to hurt her feelings.
Oh, it's, very unusual, but beautiful. Rather, I like that light brown weave on the hem.
The light brown weave crumbled off under Woby's paw. It was mud, which had turned to dust. Blench carried on swirling and showing it off, blissfully unaware.
Lovely, ain't it? And can you smell that perfume from it? Reminds me of something, though I can't just think what it is.
A bit like pale old cider, eh?
Dottie trod meaningly on Ruff's footpaw and glared at him.
Never. It was a special perfume belonging to Grandma. I had a lovely letter from my mother, too, you know, but it got lost.
Southpaw and Bob Weave took Dottie's paws and hauled her away.
I say, Miss Dottie, come and lend a paw with the supplies. These chaps have got a great cave full of victuals up yonder.
She made a hasty exit, accompanied by the twins. The feast was an epic triumph, with the centerpiece a great cauldron of shrimp and hot root soup, cooked to Frutch's own family recipe. The Gwasom cooks produced pear flans, apple pies, blackberry tarts, and rhubarb crumble. Merklewort and her hog rabble contributed loaves and biscuits hot from the ovens. Girth placed himself in charge of drinks. He made mint and rose-hip tea, a cordial of dandelion and burdock, and a great deal of fruit punch. Bragalov had the sentries relieved often so that all could join in. Skittles tried to keep his eyes open, but he was so tired that he fell asleep with a ladle of crumbles still in one paw. It was inevitable that singing and dancing would break out. There were many good dancers among the tribes gathered there. A sea otter shanty was started by Brog's two young singing otters, accompanied by drums, flutes, and stone clappers. Amid much fancy paw-stepping by hares, otters, hedgehogs, and squirrels, the music rattled along at a breakneck pace.
"Oh, rattledy-dowledy-doodle-hi-yay, we're full of plum duff and salt water!" Now the rattledy-dow was a leaky old craft, with aprons and kerchiefs for sails fore and aft. And all of her crew thought the cap'n was daft, and he was sure they was all barmy. Her anchor was made from a big rusty pot that they hauled up each morning to serve dinner hot. But the crew was too slow, so the cook scoffed the lot, and a seagull flew off with the puddin'. "So 'tis heave away, mateys, the wind's blowin' west, and the cabin mole's wearin' his grandma's blue vest, while the mate's got a blanket tattooed on his chest to keep his fat stomach from freezin'. Well, there's fish in the sea better mannered than we, for they washes their flippers and don't slop their tea. And we'd be better off on the land, don't yer see, 'cause I think that the old ship is sinkin'. Oh, rattledy-dowledy-doodle-hi-yay, nail a pie to the door for me mother."
They sang it again, this time at double speed. Hares leapt high, seeing if they could wiggle their ears 6 times before hitting the ground again. Bucko could do 8 ear wiggles. He was the envy of all. Dancers had often to jig out of the way of hedgehogs revolving in mad spins. Otters twined their tails and somersaulted over the fire. Squirrels high-kicked wildly, gritting their teeth as sand flew about. Around them all, the gwasom shrews joined paws and spun in a wide, eye-blurring wheel. Right at the center, Girth danced sedately with Brog's mum, bowing and hopping gracefully, while Frutch curtsied and performed dainty little steps, holding her apron wide. Old Bramwell sat chuckling with Brocktree.
"Will you look at them, sire? I never saw such jiggin' in all me seasons, what? I say that pretty young'un, Dottie, those hair twins, won't leave her alone. They want every blinkin' dance with her."
Brocktree chuckled. "She'd be disappointed if they did leave her alone, a fatal beauty like our Dottie. Tell me, Bramwell, what was my father Stonepaw like? You served under him, didn't you?" Bramwell wiped both eyes on a large, spotty kerchief and blew his nose.
"Lord Stonepaw was the wisest, gentlest beast a hare ever knew. He was my badger lord and my good friend, sire."
Brocktree knew he was upsetting the old hare, but he had to put the question to him that he had been too moved to ask when Stiffener had sat between himself and Fleetscott and told them that Lord Stonepaw was dead. "I never knew him very well, you see. Badgers leave home while their sons are still young. 'Twould be a tense household with 2 grown male badgers in it. Now, I don't want every little detail, but please tell me, how did he die?" Bramwell stared into the fire, answering without hesitation.
"He went bravely, Lord, more courageously than any beast could imagine, surrounded by those blue murderers. He laid down his life to give us time to escape."
Brocktree put a paw about Bramwell's shaking shoulders. "You've no need to distress yourself further, old one. I know now. My father died like a true badger lord, full of the blood wrath, taking many vermin with him." Bramwell's tears sizzled in the embers at the fire's edge as he nodded and dabbed at his eyes.
"'Twas so, Lord, 'twas so."
Brocktree rose, flickering flame shadows playing over his immobile face. Bramwell looked up at him. The badger lord looked like something carved from rock, which had stood there since the dawn of time. At last, Brocktree shouldered his sword. "Waste no more tears, you good old beast. Stonepaw would not want grief. he would want retribution. I am here now. It is the turn of Ungat Trun and his vermin to suffer. I will make them weep full sore before they die. He strode off toward the cliff tops alone. Bucko Big Bones threw himself down beside Bramwell, panting from the dance. He seized a flagon of cordial and drained it.
"Hey, Alden, I seen you talking with the big boy-o.
Ach, 'twill be a thing t'I see when that'n takes himself off t'I battle."
Ungat Trun could not sleep. He wandered the upper passages of Salamandastron until he came to a small chamber on its north side, where he had chosen to store his own armor and weapons. His restless eyes sought out a long trident leaning against the wall. He took the weapon and hefted it. This trident had served him well many times in battle. 3 barb-headed copper prongs gleamed dully in the torchlight. He ran his paw over the oaken shaft until it met the cord-bound grip at its middle. Grasping it firmly, he went to the window and stood staring out toward the cliffs in the distance.
"Brock Tree of Brock Hall, eh? So that's what they call you. I know you are out there somewhere, Badger Lord. I am Ungat Trun, the Earthshaker, who makes the stars fall from the sky. This mountain is mine, by right of conquest. Here I stay. Come to me."
He pointed out of the window at the cliffs with his trident. Brock Tree stood on the cliff tops, the night breeze ruffling his fur, though his eyes never once blinked against the wind. He gazed at the dark shape to the south, the mountain looming high on the western shore edge. Drawing his sword, he pointed it at Salamandastron, starlight shimmering along the burnished blade's length.
"I know your face, Wildcat. Soon you will see mine. I am coming. Eulalia!"
32. Morning sun shone down on a strange scene. Dervy and his crew also witnessed it, and they turned from the water's edge and hastened back to camp. Leaders of all the tribes and crews were taking breakfast inside the cave with Brock Tree, about to begin a council of war, when Dervy and Conal dashed in, breathless and excited.
"Come and see! All the blue bottoms are parading out along the shore!"
The Badger Lord put aside his food.
"Where?" "I'd say about a third the distance twixt here and the mountain. 'Tis a sight to see, eh, Conal?"
The cheeky-faced otter maid was grim and shaken.
"Aye, you can't see the sands of the beach for 'em."
Rulango the heron stalked into the cave. Logalog Gren took a backward pace at the sight of the fearsome bird.
"Where did that monster come from?"
Brog went to Rulango and stroked his neck.
"I forgot to tell ye about this un. He's Rulango, the eyes and ears of the Bark crew. Where'd you get to yesterday, mate?"
He cleared a patch in the sand, and Rulango sketched out several fishes. Brog nodded.
"Fishing, eh? Well, you got to eat just like any beast. No need to tell us what's down on the shore. We know."
But the heron kept dabbing his talons down on the sand until it was covered in tiny dots.
"See all these dots? Each one's a blue bottom," Brog explained.
Rulango scraped out a row of scratches.
"He says that for every scratch, there's that many again. Too many for him to sketch."
Brock Tree shouldered his sword.
"Come on, I've got to see this. Bring your weapons."
Brock Tree took with him a selected small band, Dottie and the twins among them. Using the dunes as cover and keeping low, they threaded their way south between the sand hills at the base of the cliffs. When Dervy judged they had gone far enough, he led them west toward the shore. Dottie wriggled her way forward, joining Brock Tree and Ruff in the long grass on top of a high dune.
"Oh, my giddy aunt! Look at that lot!"
Rank upon rank of blue horde beasts lined the beach, 20 wide and 10 deep, almost as far as the eye could see. Each section comprised vermin carrying different weapons. One group had pikes, another javelins, yet another was made up of archers. There were slingers, sword beasts, and club wielders, each headed by a captain. Ruff started a hasty calculation in the sand, but he soon gave up.
'Tis no use, matey. They'd eat our little army alive.
Bucko and Fleetscott crawled up beside them and lay gaping.
By the left, sir, I didn't imagine there were that many blinking vermin on Earth.
Ach, 'twould be plain suicide going up against yon vermin.
However, the Badger Lord took no notice of their comments. His eyes roved slowly over the scene below. I don't see their leader. Ungat Trun isn't there. Dottie pointed out a figure standing at the head of a group of officers below the tide line.
I say, sir, what about that chap? He looks like a sort of commanding type, what?
The Badger Lord studied the one Dottie had singled out. He's no wildcat. Looks like a fox to me. Any beast know who he is? Derby shaded his eyes against the sun.
That's Karangul, captain-in-chief of Trun's fleet.
Bucko was halfway up, his eyes blazing madly.
Aye, so 'tis. Bide ye here. I'm bound to kill the scum that slaughtered my family.
Rocktree and Ruff bore the mountain hare down forcibly, though he struggled like a wild beast.
Take your paws off of me! I have business with yon fox.
Rocktree leaned heavily on Bucko, pinning him firmly. Your business is our business, too, friend. I'm not getting this party slain or captured because of you. Now, do you want me to sit on you? I'm quite heavy, you know. Bucko spat out sand, but did not attempt to move.
Ach, you can let me go, Brock. I'll deal with yon scum another time. I was behaving like a fool.
They released him and continued watching the vermin.
What are you thinking, sir?
Dottie murmured to Brock. The Badger Lord never took his eyes off the horde beasts.
Right at this moment, I'm thinking lots of things, miss. My first thought is that Brog and the Bark crew have been doing an excellent job.
Ha! That's what I was waiting for. Did you see that rat? Front rank, third column, there.
I see him. He's just fallen over. Tripped on his spear, do you think, sir?
No, Dottie. He's fainted with hunger. The captains seem well enough, but take a good look at the rank-and-file vermin. Ruff, what do you see?
Looks like they're having a pretty thin time of things. I'd say they was starving, the whole gang of them.
Rocktree glanced back at the clifftops.
Right, but more of that later.
I think we'd best make ourselves scarce.
I can see your bird hovering up yonder, Brog. He'll be flying over here to tell you that there's more vermin leaving the mountain to come along the clifftops.
The wildcat is a clever general. He wouldn't miss the chance of hitting us from behind while we're busy watching his troops. Let's get out of here quickly and quietly. As they slid down the rear of the dune, Brog gave orders.
Every beast keep low. Back to the caves now, quickly. Derby, take Ervo, Rad, and Conal and cover our trail.
Ungat Trun sat in council with Karangul and Vrigoral. Rip Fang was present, too. They waited respectfully until the wildcat spoke.
Do you think they saw the parade?
Karangul shrugged.
Mightness, who can tell? I did not see them.
Trun nodded at Vrigoral to make her report.
They could not have been there, O Great One. I led the ambush party along the clifftops. We searched the dunes, and there was no sign of them, not even paw prints, sire.
Rip Fang put in his opinion.
I did like you said, Mightiness. Took a ship along the coast. There was no sign of them watching from the sea.
The wildcat paced the chamber, shaking his head.
But I know they were there, spying on my hordes. The Badger is no fool. He would have taken the opportunity to assess our strength. I know it.
Rip Fang gave voice to what the others were thinking.
That horde on the beach today, it could have swept up both sides of the cliffs and scoured your enemies out.
Ungat Trun sat down, looking thoughtful.
Yes, I could have done that, but it would leave the mountain undefended. Any good commander knows that this mountain is the prize. The beast who holds it fights from a position of strength. I want them to come to me.
Mightness, what if they don't?
Trun's claws drummed a tattoo on the tabletop.
Then I will have to do as Rip Fang says. send the hordes to root them out. Hey, Rip Fang?
The other two were surprised that Trun should ask the former Sea Rat's opinion. So was Rip Fang, but he answered readily enough.
Aye, you're right there, sir. But I wouldn't leave it too long if and I was you. Every day your beasts are getting more hungry. You can't afford a long, drawn-out wait.
Ungat Trun turned his eyes to his source of inspiration.
Spiders are like that, too. They will wait, but not for long. The moment the time is ripe, they pounce.
Back at the store cave, Juka gave out the last bundle of weapons to be distributed around.
There, 'tis empty now. This will be thy home for a while.
Frutch held her lantern up to get a better view.
I like the other cave better. This is a bit pokey.
Blench tightened her apron strings resolutely.
Don't fret, dearie. We'll soon make this comfortable. I'll get some moulds to scoop out the back there where the rocks are loose. We'll put the ovens again that wall. Woby, what do you think about that ledge yonder? Spread with moss and sailcloth, 'twill make fine seats and beds. I'm glad we used up the last of the shrimp. Mayhap we can get some decent meals cooked. Shall I ask the shrew cooks to lend a paw with the dinner, Frutch? I'd be beholden to them if they did. Such good cooks.
Lord Brocktree was addressing a meeting in the big valley between the dunes outside the old cave. Every beast fit to march or fight was in attendance. They sat on the dune sides and hilltops, listening to what their leader had to say.
We saw many vermin on the shore this morning, more than a beast could shake 10 sticks at. It was meant to be Ungat Trun's show of force, though the vermin looked so thin and starved that it was more a show of weakness. But still, they are far too numerous for us to meet in open warfare. Now, I have some ideas of my own, but I am open to good and sensible suggestions as to how they can be defeated.
Brog immediately held up his paw.
I says we carry on cutting off their supplies. The bark crew was doing a first-class job. You said it yourself.
Ruff answered for the Badger Lord.
Aye, mate. But if we carries on cutting off their victuals, Tron'll get desperate sooner or later, and they'll come out in force after us. With the numbers they got, we'll lose.
There was a murmur of agreement. Brocktree held up his paws.
Good. That's what I was hoping you'd say. That's what I was thinking myself. But I have a plan.
Brr, then do ee tell us ee plans, Us'n's gettin' orful ungered settin' out yer.
End of side 7. To continue, turn the cassette over.